Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Gentlemen,
Happy
ladies,
Monday.
what are you talking about? They're not ladies or
Well,
gentlemen.
what's up, motherfuckers?
There's a peep. There you go.
You like that better? I was trying to be classy.
Stop,
You fucked
bitches.
it up.
We're doing Sisters, a movie called Sisters, which Tila told me to watch this one. As part
well,
of the
see,
deal.
what
and
ended
that
up
bitch hadn't shown up. Where are you, Tila?
what ended up happening with this was it's weird because I was actually gonna do, because you know I have my Flickers of Fear show, which is, you know, movies reviews that I do by myself, and this was actually the next one that I was gonna record. And then when somebody mentioned it, when Tila mentioned it in the comments and said like Margot Kidder was in it, you're like, oh well, I want to watch that too. So I was like, well, okay, well, we'll just do it on the matinee show, we can watch it together. And then, you know, I'll just pick another movie to do for my other movie review.
It's a pretty good movie. I've never seen it before.
I saw it probably 5 or 6 years ago for the first time.
It's kind of like an Alfred Hitchcock movie. It's kind of like Psycho. Or not really. Psycho mixed with a bunch of other stuff. It's got hypnotism in it and Siamese twins and Margot Kidder and murders. And Margot looks great in it. She looks really good. She's pretty young in this.
Yeah, this was before Black Christmas even.
Yeah. She did a couple of nude scenes in it. It's like, she was looking good, man. I mean, she's thin, a little too thin for me. I like fucking kind of stocky, muscular kind of look. But she's pretty stacked in it for what it was. I mean, by the time she's Lois Lane, she's just too goddamn skinny. I mean, that cocaine, I guess, just tearing her up. But at least she looks female in this, you know?
I mean,
she's
I feel
got
like
boobs.
I feel like the coke whore thing was like a big thing in the 70s.
Just snorting too much.
Everyone had to be
coke.
So thin that they could get into those like really super tight pants that I didn't know how people breathed in them.
But she's cute in it. She's got a damn French accent, and a bunch of bad shit happens, and then you find out all kinds of stuff, and then this happens, and that dude died. Another dude saw it. And a guy tracked
Thank
him back
you. That
to
was
that
a
place.
Very, very good plot
That's
synopsis.
How thing goes. Yeah, you guys know exactly what I'm talking about.
I feel like...
Then Tila shows up. What's up, T? Just talking about it. Where is that bitch? I did this movie. We reviewed this movie because you told me to.
Yeah, because I was gonna review it by myself, but you wanted to see it because Margot Kidder was in it.
Yeah, even T saying that Margot looked great in it. Yeah, it's just ever since I was a kid, you know what I mean? Fucking looking at that woman, you know, fucking she was cute, man. There was just something kind of vaguely kind of we used kind of slutty about her. Now, when I say that, it's like a 70s or 80s slut. Which I just meant that was a woman who owned her sexuality. You know, it wasn't the way we used to use those words, maybe not how you'd use it today. Didn't mean that she's just fucking everybody, you know, or just that didn't really mean that. It just meant sexually powerful.
Well, I think that's why she was my favorite character in Black Christmas, just because she was like a drunk slut and she didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And she was just like making dirty jokes at everybody. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's the girl I want to hang out with.
Yeah, you don't want to hang out with a good girl.
No.
It wasn't even like that when I was a kid. Yeah. Good girls? No, you wanted the bad one. You wanted the bad one. That was the one that was going to be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so like I said, this movie actually came out a couple years before Black Christmas. This came out in 1972.
Yeah.
So this is directed famously by Brian De Palma. I feel like it's kind of one of his lesser known ones because it's like 4 years before Carrie. Mm. And I feel like that was kind of his big breakout, you know?
Yeah.
So
said Tom, my ears were burning. Yeah,
I was talking about you. Louis said, yeah, she was getting kids drunk. I know, that was one of my favorite parts. I'm like, look at her contributing to the delinquency of a minor. You naughty girl.
Yeah, she and first thing she does with her fucking slutty French accent is fucking hook up with a fucking good-looking, light-skinned black dude. But he's like a man of honor and shit. You know what I mean?
This movie,
he kills his ass.
Well,
and I was like, damn, fucking
get spoiler alert. Well, yeah, like I said, this movie's super old. So, like, if you haven't seen it, like, sorry, but yeah. So, I feel like, well, Brian De Palma, I feel like a lot of people like shit on him because they're like, oh, well, he's just like a Hitchcock copyist, but he never made a secret of that. He was like a big, huge fan of Hitchcock, and he actually made this movie in particular as an homage to Hitchcock. He used Bernard Herrmann, who famously did the Psycho score, did the score for this, even though he was semi-retired at the time. And there are a lot of shots in it are direct homages to other Hitchcock movies, like, you know, from Vertigo. There's one, the scene where Philip, the guy that she kills, you know, he's kind of crawling through the whole apartment, like leaving a trail of blood or whatever, like this really long, like tracking shot. I think that that was like his homage to Rope, which was another Hitchcock movie. So he didn't make a secret about I'm making this as a Hitchcock homage, but it's still a great movie in its own right. It's like, it just has, I don't know. There's just something really about this one that appeals to me. I'm not sure what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, to me, it's just, I'm looking at, it's a good movie, but I'm just looking at Margot Kidder, just bringing back memories. You know what I mean?
That's like he just got distracted and he couldn't even like pay attention to what was going on in the plot.
She looked like one of those chicks that you'd find one of them old fucking porn rags we used to dig up out of fucking garbage when we were kids. Fucking like, what was it? Stag magazine.
Yeah.
Or fucking High Society and shit back in fucking 1981. She just looked like that. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
You guys had to be there to understand. Some of you guys who are old enough to who remember those times, you know what I mean? You know what it is I'm talking about. There was just something kind of illicit about the way they looked, the way they acted. It's a lost art. It's a lost art, yeah.
It's a lost
art. Yeah.
But yeah, so, yeah, interestingly, I thought this was kind of an interesting choice. So Margot Kidder plays a French-Canadian model in this, with the French accent and everything. And the thing about it is, well, Margot Kidder is Canadian.
Yeah.
She's not French-Canadian, though. She's not from Quebec, I don't think, but she's from another part of Canada. So I'm guessing the French accent was fake, but I thought it was okay.
Tina says Tom got boobatized. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I was like, wait, but hold on. She's different in this one. She got a little bit of weight on her. And then then they're talking about that penthouse was always the one to go. That one in Hustler. No, I was thinking even below a couple rungs, you know, like Stag. Remember that one? Velvet. They had one called Velvet. It's just fucking crazy.
Yeah, that sounds vaguely.
Yeah, good. We magazine. Remember that? That shit went all out of business, I think, by the time the 90s had come around.
Well, yeah, because we had the internet.
VHS started to fucking appear, yeah.
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 But yeah, so this was actually, I guess Brian De Palma got the idea for this from a real life case of Siamese twins, like Canada's first Siamese, or they were Russian, I think, you know, or from the Soviet Union. And I guess he had seen a photograph of them, which I think he tried to recreate a little bit for this movie, like with Margot Kidder, like it was on some of the promotional material and it was in the movie as well, with like one of the sisters sitting there looking ahead and smiling and looking all happy and everything. And then the other one kind of over here looking all grouchy and evil and shit. Yeah. So he said it was a really striking image and it kind of like stuck in his head. So he used that image as sort of like the idea behind this movie. So, what?
They're laughing. They're bringing up all the old magazines. So they're talking about Sherry magazine and shit. Fucking, I remember that shit. They're all bringing it. They're remembering it. Fucking, no needs. Goes, yeah, the trailer park type girl says, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah.
And then Esther says, my boyfriend had those magazines. And then Louis goes, you guys remember Biggins magazine? Biggins. Jugs. That was another.
I remember seeing like jugs sometimes, like in the because sometimes depending on the convenience store you went to, like most of them was under the counter, but some of them would just put them behind the counter because they didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
So sometimes you go buy some gum or something.
Yeah. Grandpa's like, hey, talking about having we in penthouse in the tree fort underneath the carpets and stuff. Yeah, we stashed them fucking things
in my tree fort.
Yeah.
I feel like all the boys that grew up in that area did that.
Because dudes were throwing them out. Fucking, we were going through the older, you know, fucking grown men were throwing them things out. Fucking, we'd go through the trash trying to find them.
Yeah.
Because that's what you did when you were a kid.
Well, yeah, like I said,
you find a whole jackpot, you know, like fucking like six or seven of them and shit. You know?
I've heard from several dudes that grew up in that time period.
Yeah.
They all kind of had the same experience.
You couldn't buy them.
Man, there was all kind of dudes like throwing porn magazines out in the woods. Well, maybe because they knew it's like, I'll throw that out there for the kids.
The kids will find it, yeah. Or you're like seven or eight. You're looking
passing
for those.
It on
you're
to
like
next
seven
generation.
And eight. You're looking for the things.
That's
you know?
What they're doing.
You're talking about all this shit sexualizing those kids. Well, you didn't grow up in the 70s.
Well, you had to learn about shit somewhere.
Yeah, back in the 70s. Back in the 70s was worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, worse, in quotations, it was better. It was more realistic. It was more healthy.
Well, in some ways it was worse, in some ways it was better.
Well, we weren't locked up. Yeah. You know, we grew up outside.
Tila said, who would have thought that the movie Sisters would have dudes going down porn mag memory lane? That's what I mean. Yeah, it's like, I can't even talk about the movie.
Okay. You guys need to straighten. Comment section needs to straighten the fuck up. Straighten the fuck up.
I mean, if you don't want me to talk about the movie, I won't.
No.
I'm just saying.
I'm going to blame it all on the comment section.
Because like I said, I was going
to
review this by myself, but
to chill the fuck out.
You were the ones that said...
get your mind out of the gutter.
You wanted to watch it, so...
Shit.
What?
I forgot.
What? Forgot what?
My injection's got to take an injection today. I'll be all right.
Well, it's all right. We'll get around to it. You'll be fine.
Okay.
I promise.
Yeah.
Well, you should have thought of that earlier. You got all day.
We had to work. Yeah, well, you know.
You got all day.
I just got to rig it up. You can shoot it.
Yeah, so the story behind this one, as I said, that, you know, so Margot Kidder is playing Danielle, who's a French-Canadian model. At the very beginning of the show, she's on this TV show, like this cheesy-ass TV show. It's kind of like Candid Camera, but it's called, like, Peeping Tom, right? Mm-hmm. And while she's on this show, she meets Philip, who's this dude, and she thinks he's like super foxy and whatever. So they kind of go out to dinner and then they go back to her apartment. Meanwhile, her creepy, supposedly ex-husband, Emil, is like following them around, like all the way back to Staten Island on the fucking ferry, because that's where this was shot, Staten Island in New York. And so Philip's a little freaked out, but he kind of like misdirects. They get Emil to go away. So the two of them bang. Now, the next morning, you're not really entirely sure at first, like, what the fuck is going on with Danielle, right? Because she gets up out of bed. She seems a little out of sorts. You're like, well, maybe she's just hungover from the night before because she was super drunk. She's taken some medication. Then you hear her talking to somebody else in French in another room. And you presume that this is her twin sister, Dominique, who she's been talking about before. So Philip overhears this. And then she's like, oh, it's our birthday. And it's like, she's usually in the mental asylum, but they said that she could come visit me today because it was the birthday. And now she's pissed off that you're here and blah, blah. So he goes to the pharmacy to get her to pick up her prescription, because I guess that was a thing you could do back then. You could just pick up random drugs for people. And then he decides to be a nice dude. And so he sees a bakery and he gets them a birthday cake and puts both their names on it. Only problem is when he gets back to the apartment, apparently Dominique is now in the apartment and she stabs his ass. Now, a complicating factor arises because he doesn't die right away and he's just like crawling through the apartment and he actually manages to get up to a window and write like help me on it in his blood like before he dies. And the woman across the courtyard in the other apartment, whose name is Grace Collier. She's like a newspaper reporter.
Yeah, she's another cutie.
And she sees it, although her hair in this is terrible.
Yeah.
What were they thinking? Well, what was she thinking? I feel like a lot of women have.
That was 70s porn.
Yeah, it was almost like a mullet, sort of.
Yeah.
It was just like that shag. Because I kind of feel like when I was little, because my great aunt was a hairdresser. And so she always used to come over to my grandma's house and she used to cut all our hair, like all our kids' hair. And I feel like she did that to my hair a few times in the 70s. Like that kind of shag sort of shit.
It's that 70s porn hair I was talking about. Kind of like the old Dorothy Hamill haircuts. Remember those? Look like a fucking top of a circumcised dick.
It did. Yeah. I never had that.
Yeah.
But I for sure had. Now, the hair that the actress Jennifer Salt has in this, I had hair kind of similar to that, I think, when I was 7 or 8 years old.
Old mushroom head.
I mean... Who would have thought, that looked good?
I guess it was kind of cute until you fucking looked closely at it for too long.
I couldn't figure out.
A dick.
Yeah. it does.
Shit was fucking funny.
I couldn't figure out how it worked, like, just the logistics of it. Like, I was like, how do you even, because I can't get my hair to do shit, honestly. So.
And they had to curl it underneath it.
Yeah, and it's like, how. What does that look like when you wake up? I never had hair like that, so I don't really know. Like, I'm sure you really have to, like, maintain that shit, which is probably why I never had it done. Because it looked like, I like hair that you can just wake up and it looks passable. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why I just keep it easy. It's just kind of, like, parted in the middle with bangs. Because it's, like, kind of hard to mess that up. But yeah, so she ends up stabbing his ass. The woman across the thing, like, sees it. And she runs over and is trying to, like, get Danielle into trouble. She doesn't know Danielle, but I mean, you know, so she's, but the cops don't want to listen to her, ironically. Well, I don't know if it's ironic, but because Grace has written a lot of kind of anti-cop shit, like in the papers. So the cops are just kind of like, man, fuck you, bitch, whatever. You're just like making stuff up. But the sad thing is that Grace is right. Like, there is a dead guy in the apartment. But what happened was that Danielle said, oh, Dominique was here and she did it. And she seems to be acting like different, like she didn't realize what was going on. Emil comes over and they hide the body in a sort of genius place in the fucking hide-a-bed in the couch. And I was just kind of like, hey, they don't call that a hide-a-bed for nothing. That's a pretty clever place to hide it. And honestly, I liked this part of the movie a lot because you know how Brian De Palma like uses all that split screen? Like he did it in Carrie. He does it all the time. That's kind of one of his motifs. And I thought that was like a really great... okay. Bye.
What was that all about?
I don't know. This my phone was ringing.
Stop calling. We're doing a goddamn show.
I don't know who it was. It wasn't anybody. It was from somebody from Daytona or so. I don't know. It was a Daytona area number.
One of your other boyfriends.
Yeah. Yeah, all the boyfriends that I have.
Yeah, all those boyfriends, yeah.
I'm just,
you can't even handle one.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm up to my armpit.
I got by myself driving her crazy. She doesn't need any other ones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I would never like do it. I'm like, look, dude, one is more than enough. All right, it's like
I got one child.
You're hard enough to deal with. I don't need more than that.
God damn,
it's too much trouble. But yeah, ridiculous. So no, yep. Yeah, well, no, it's true though.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Probably wanted you to let you know your car warranty is expiring. That's probably exactly what it was. Oh my God. Tila said, you know what? I didn't notice this. Tila said, I noticed the actor who played Emil was the lead in Phantom of the Paradise. Holy shit.
He was? Emil?
I thought he looked familiar. God, yeah, that was bugging me the whole time. God damn it. Thank you, Tila.
That's right. We were calling him a fucking...
John Waters looking motherfucker. Yeah. I said he looked like a John Waters motherfucker. Well, because he had that little teeny weird pedo stash and well, that's what that...
John a pedo stash.
Well, John Waters isn't a pedophile. He's a lovely human being. But but that's kind of what that is. You know what I mean?
Pedo stash.
But yeah, so I love like the whole split screen with Grace like arguing with the cops in the lobby. And meanwhile, Emil and Danielle are like trying to hide the body and clean up the apartment and everything. And it's just so good. Like the fucking, cause you can see both of them going on at the same time. Finally, like the cops drag their asses up there and Danielle is acting totally, totally cool. You know, nothing happened, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, they can't find anything, even though there's like a blood stain on the back of the couch that they missed, but the cops don't see it. Now, Grace suspects that she doesn't think Danielle killed anybody, but she thinks Danielle is covering for somebody else. And so she kind of like snoops around the apartment, like while the cops aren't looking, and she finds that birthday cake in the fridge that says Danielle and Dominique on it. And she's like, ha, you know what I mean? I've got it. And then she comes out in the fucking living room and then she slips on the shit that Emil was using to like clean the floor and the cake gets all fucked up. So she gets like totally gaslit through this whole thing, even though she's correct, even though Danielle or Dominique did kill somebody.
Yeah. Hey, Tila, did you see Repo Genetic Opera? Go ahead.
He's going to keep bugging you about it until you see it.
Because I kept up my end of the bargain. Bitch, she didn't see that shit. I got you, bitch.
Okay. Well, like I said, you got to give people some time. There's only so many hours in the day.
Right.
Because like I said, I got tons of shit I got to watch and read and shit like that. And I just don't have time to do all. I just don't have time to do it all. But yeah, so Grace becomes convinced that she is correct, that that body is somewhere. And she's going to write a story about it. So she starts her own investigation because the cops are basically like, man, shut up. There's nothing going on. So she gets like a private investigator, or the newspaper gets a private investigator played by Charles Durning, of all people. And he kind of breaks into the apartment and finds the thing about the twins. Now, as they kind of go through the story, so it's basically like a murder mystery at first, but then you find out, because you think that Danielle's twin sister, who has gone back to the mental asylum, was the one that committed the murder. But it turns out that Danielle did have a Siamese twin, and they were separated actually quite recently. I think it was like less than a year before. But Dominique died during that operation to separate them. Emil was the guy that separated them. He was like the doctor. And... since Dominique died, I guess Danielle has sort of internalized her sister and is essentially like being both the sisters. Yeah. So she killed Philip, but she doesn't remember it because she like dissociates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So yeah, so you have that kind of thing going on, like this whole Siamese twin thing, the whole murder mystery thing. And there's also like some shit at the end, which, because remember how I was saying like Grace, she knew, she, because she saw like Philip in the window and he was writing "help me" in his blood, and she actually saw the woman stabbing him, right? So she's like reporting it to police and they don't believe her because when they get up to the apartment, there's like nothing going on up there. And so she, you know, investigates herself. But then in the course of the investigation, she ends up going to this mental hospital where Emil still works. And she goes in there trying to like confront him or whatever. And then Emil says that she's another patient. And so yeah. No one believes her then either. And then he ends up drugging her and hypnotizing her and giving her a post-hypnotic suggestion that she never saw the body.
Yeah.
And it works.
Yeah. Tila's got to read Tila's comment.
Where is it?
At the top.
Repo? Not yet, but I did see Legend of Boggy Creek made in 72. Oh my God, so cheesy and bad. Yeah. I'm scared to see the second one.
We just did a review of his first movie, Boggy Creek. Just
recorded. No, not Boggy Creek. Excuse we me, did Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yeah, we just recorded it before we did the show.
Yeah. She said Repo is up for tonight.
Yeah. And we did mention the Boggy Creek series.
Yeah.
I don't remember the first Boggy Creek. The one
I vaguely remember it, but
it's the second one that I kind of liked it. Town That Dreaded Sundown, we saw that last night. It's actually a competent movie. It's a lot better than the Boggy Creek movies. It's pretty good. It's based on a real case.
Yeah, it's based, like I said, it's based on the Phantom Killer of Texarkana, which we did a show about a long time ago.
Yeah.
But the real series of murders.
Nah, I'd watch Repo over watching Boggy Creek, but fucking Boggy Creek 2 is the better one.
Well, like I said, if you're going to watch Boggy Creek 2, watch the Mystery Science Theater version.
Yeah, yeah.
It's much, a lot funnier. It's much easier to watch.
Yeah.
With people making jokes about it.
Yeah, because they're kind of boring by today's standards to edit. They're kind of long and, well, not really long. There's a lot of dead space in them. Shit that you could put jokes in there, riffing on it. And you know, it's a lot better when somebody's riffing on it.
Yeah.
All of them. All those old movies are.
Well, that's why they usually end up doing like a lot of the older ones. Because they had these kind of like gaps in.
Yeah, a lot of gaps and stuff.
Yeah, she said the first Boggy is like a mockumentary. Yeah, it's Town That Dreaded Sundown is a little bit like that too, but that's actually based on, well, I mean, I guess you could argue that Legend of Boggy Creek is technically based on a real legend.
Yeah.
Like the, whatever.
But the legend isn't real. It was made up to keep black people out of there.
Well, yeah, we mentioned that before, it's based on did we figure out how to pronounce that? The Fouk monster? Fouk monster?
Folk monster. Folk.
Folk?
Probably folk.
Folk? It's F-O-U-K-E.
Folk.
Yeah.
Folk.
It looks like Fouk.
In Mississippi, you'd say folk.
Y'all don't know how to pronounce shit.
Folk. Well, it might actually be F-O-L-K, but you pronounce that folk also, and you could spell it that way. It might be...
Yeah, but F-O-U-K-E.
Folk.
Seems like it should be...
Folk.
Fouk.
No, folk.
Or Fouk, if it was French.
Not in redneck. In
well, Mississippi, I know. That's redneck, what I'm saying. Y'all don't know, y'all know how to pronounce it.
And that would be the same thing as F-O-L-K. Folk. Folk. It'll be folk. That's probably what it is.
I feel like, well,
unless they're naming it after a man.
I imagine that probably it is named after a person's last name.
Right.
And I remember, like, Dan Bell did a show about that monster that the Boggy Creek creature was based on. And he like asked them how they pronounced it, but now I can't remember because it was so long ago that I saw it. Yeah, it's Arkansas. Is that Tila? Yeah, it's Arkansas.
In the deep, deep parts of the South, you just pronounce things the way that's most comfortable for you. You know what I'm talking about? There's no method to any of that.
Well, and just hope that other people know what the hell you're talking about. And even they're probably not.
They're all doing that too. You know.
But yeah, so getting back to what we were talking about. So I kind of feel like the movie Sisters is sort of like a forgot. It's got a Criterion Collection shit now, too. Because like I said, it's Brian De Palma. It's one of his earlier ones. And that's what we watched. We saw it on Amazon Prime. We rented it. I think it was $3.99. And that was like the Criterion Collection, version. And it looks really nice. Like I said, I love all the split screen shit. I love all the Hitchcock homages. I especially like the shit toward the end once Grace gets to the mental hospital and she gets hypnotized. And then there's that whole really weird sequence where they're essentially telling the story of what happened with Danielle and Dominique and them being separated. And it was this whole thing where Danielle wanted to was married to Emil, but, you know, it's kind of awkward being a Siamese twin and being married to somebody. And it's just kind of like you have to wait for the Siamese twin to fall asleep so y'all can have sex or whatever. So I guess that Danielle got pregnant and Dominique got jealous and killed the baby, like stabbed her with garden shears or something like that. And at which point Danielle was kind of like, can we just get rid of this bitch? I'm sick of having her hanging off my hip all the time. So he separated them and then Dominique died. But then Danielle kind of went crazy. But this they do it in this whole weird dream sequence where Grace is, I guess she's like drugged and hypnotized and she's seeing herself in Dominique's position. And it's really cool. It's like, I really, really like that sequence. It's like really creepy. He said that he got the idea for doing that from the part from Rosemary's Baby, like where she was getting raped by Satan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that weird dream sequence.
Yeah.
He said that's where he got the idea for doing that. It's like all in black and white and like all these people that she knows like keep turning up. There's like all these kind of sideshow performers in the background for whatever reason. Well, not for whatever reason. That's, you know, because Siamese twins. Yeah. Sideshows. So there's that kind of whole thing going. She sees people she knows in the background and it's kind of like, you know, the one part where they're going to separate them and then like there's a cleaver and like all the dudes around are like passing the cleaver from one to another and then he's like chopping them in half and shit. It's like really, really freaky. I think that's like a really good nightmare sequence in that one. And I also love the end. The last shot of the movie. Because like I said, you know, they hid Philip's body in the couch, right? Now, Danielle does get her comeuppance because she kills Emil, you know, and that's like witnessed. So she gets arrested for that. And they still suspect that then finally the cops come around and be like, oh, sorry, Grace, I guess she is a murderer. Like, you know, sorry, we gaslit you this whole movie. But by that point, Grace has been, you know, hypnotized and she doesn't remember the murder anymore. So that's no help there. And then they show at the end, the couch that had the body in it, they actually had some movers take it and they left it like at this fucking remote ass train station in Canada somewhere. And like the very last scene is like this fucking couch just sitting there. There's like a cow comes up and like looks at it. And then, but then you see like the private investigator like up on a fucking light pole or whatever, like looking down at it through binoculars. So I guess like he was still following up on the shit because he said, I'm going to follow that couch because I think that's where the body is. Because they did figure out that that's where the body was because the couch got taken out.
Yeah, Tila, the Town That Dreaded Sundown has been remastered. It looks a lot better than the Boggy Creek movies. That was on, we saw that on Amazon, wasn't it? Amazon Prime? Didn't that have Town
Sundown? No, we watched a free version on YouTube.
Oh, that was a YouTube version? Okay.
Because remember, it's weird because we went on... Okay, so, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about Town That Dreaded Sundown because we just did a whole review.
Yeah, and that's coming up tomorrow, right?
No. Well, for patrons, it'll be Thursday. For everybody else, it'll be Friday.
Okay.
That's when it's going up. But I don't think we mentioned this on the recording that it said that it was on Amazon Prime. But then when I went on Amazon Prime, it had the trailer, but then it said, this is not available.
That's right.
So I was like, And so then I went up, but then I went on YouTube and maybe you could have rented it on YouTube. I'm not sure. But then I saw somebody had posted it for free. And it was a beautiful, beautiful version.
Yeah,
it was like a widescreen. Like it looked fantastic.
Looks about like a, 1960s, late 60s television program. Kind of, it comparable actually in quality to like, the first two Friday the 13ths, real similar.
Yeah.
I liked it. It did have some flaws and imperfections. We talk about it in the upcoming review.
Yeah.
But you can see it for free.
Yeah, as far as I know, unless copyright got taken down.
I'd say it was better than the Boggy Creek movies, but Boggy Creek 2 is pretty fun.
It's terrible, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Some fun shit happens in it. But you gotta, but like she said, If you're listening to MST version, they're riffing on it, which makes it even better.
And that is actually one of the best episodes, I think.
Right.
I really like, I like when they did kind of 70s and 80s movies, and I like when they did kind of like rednecky, like hick movies.
Yeah.
So like this one and the one, the giant spider invasion, which was shot in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Where actually Mike, who was like the head writer, he's from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So he got a lot of, he got a lot of digs in there too. So I thought that was like super fun as well. Plus, you know, there's a lot of, comedic potential in a giant spider that's clearly made out of a VW bug with carpet glued onto it.
And it's clearly shoving its victims up its ass.
Up its butt, yeah. Which they did actually make. Well, I love Servo's comment on that. It's like, it's like, should we be alarmed that the spider is stuffing them up his butt?
Yeah. Because
that's exactly what it's
doing. Exactly what it's doing. You're like, what the fuck?
And it runs down. That's how the giant spider eats you.
The best part about it is that it is once it gets big enough, the spider, it actually does, as a practical effect, run down the middle of the fucking town. It's huge. But it's clearly like a Volkswagen bug.
Yeah, it's like a
with
car.
A fucking float of a shape like a spider on top of it with its fucking legs.
They were probably so excited when they thought of that, you guys.
You can clearly see the fucking Volkswagen underneath the
damn. Who's got a VW bug? Oh, I've got one. Can I glue carpet all over it and then like put big fucking legs? It's like, look, we can even use the headlights for eyes. It'll be awesome.
Yeah, it's fucking funny, man.
It'll be awesome.
And my dad took me to see that in the theater when it came out, and it scared the shit out of me. Especially when she drank the fucking tarantula out of the blender.
Even Stephen King mentioned that scene in Dance Macabre.
Yeah.
It's funny because he's like, even though that film is like just stupid, it's like, but that scene, because in that moment, you can relate to that happening to you.
And then,
like a big, juicy tarantula crawling into your fucking smoothie, and into your blender,
and
you're drinking it without knowing.
And there's a bunch of like kinky hillbilly sexual innuendos and incest going on.
Yeah, that was also baffling.
Yeah, you're like, what? Hillbilly dude, big old fat hillbilly dude with like a hot wife, and he's trying to screw the hot wife's sister?
I think it's her younger sister.
Younger sister, and they're running around in cutoffs.
She's like,
and
it's like a teenager. She's like 17 or
something. Yeah, and they're running around in cutoffs with.
And the old dude is wearing like a truss or a back brace or something. It's super gross.
And I don't remember it exactly. I remember the fucking girls wearing shit like cutoffs and fucking tube tops, and there was like butt cheeks hanging out from underneath the fucking.
Yeah,
cutoffs.
It was definitely cutoffs, and I think they were kind of like these little halter tops that tied right above your navel.
Yeah,
I think it was that
pre-air conditioning fucking hillbilly clothing.
Yeah, like I said, it was shot in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Do you know, I remember the guy that made that movie, and that was the disgusting guy with the back brace.
Yeah.
That guy was in The Loved One, you remember? He was in that one scene, and I was like, hey, it's that guy from, because later he's like a, what do you call it? He's a dialect coach.
Okay.
Oh, he became a dialect coach later on.
That was him?
Yeah. That was him.
It was, yeah.
It's like, and if you heard him talk, because when we were watching The Loved One again, and I had forgotten that he's only like in one scene.
Yeah.
And as soon as he talked, the only thing I could think of was, you've been hitting the booze again, Ev. Yeah. I think I even said that, because I was like, that's from Giant Spider Invasion. But
yeah, wasn't the little 17-year-old running around, he's smacking her in the ass
super inappropriate.
In front of her sister or something.
Yeah.
It's weird, and like, it's going to be, it's definitely an homage to some kind of weird incest stuff going on.
Also, Alan Hale was in it, you guys.
Yeah, yeah. The skipper. Yeah.
And he was making kind of jokes about pooping and... Or like prunes and stuff.
So T's gonna see Mystery Science Theater.
I would. Yeah, it's much easier to sit through if you watch the Mystery Science Theater version.
And MST's version of fucking Giant Spider Invasion. This movie we're talking.
That's also fantastic. I've seen the MST version like a million times, and we also saw the Riff Trax live version, which is also very funny. Which is all different jokes.
You want to throw in fucking Birdemic and Manos Hands of Fate too? Those fuckers are awesome. Although that was Riff Trax, wasn't it?
That was Riff Trax.
That was Riff Trax, which is the same guys, but under a different brand.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same guys.
Yeah.
I mean, not as the new MST, but, you know, the sci-fi era ones.
Yeah.
So Pat was asking about sisters. He's like, did you think that Grace was actually the twin and that this whole thing was about... I don't know. I guess you can make an argument, but I thought my interpretation of it was... Because Emil drugged her with something, and they don't tell you what it is. It was just something that was in a, a syringe. And then he hypnotizes her and gives her that post-hypnotic suggestion that she didn't see the murder and that there was no body. And that's all that she would remember about it. So he like wiped her memory of it essentially. And I just kind of figured, because he says to her, like, while she's hypnotized, you know, I'll show you what happened. Or so I just assumed that he was telling her what happened with Danielle and Dominique and them getting separated and everything. And then she was like nightmarishly like projecting it like in her mind, like it was a movie. That's kind of the interpretation that I had about it. I mean, you know, I could be wrong, but that's kind of how I read it. I don't know. But yeah, it's weird. There was a lot of, like I said, it's very Hitchcockian in the sense that there's a lot of like voyeuristic type of stuff in it. Like even the game show at the beginning is called Peeping Tom, and it's all about like watching people doing shit and like guessing what they're going to do. And then like, you know, it's all like people watching through windows, watching through binoculars. It's like, it's all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like, which, like I said, I feel like that was a real Hitchcockian thing as well.
Yeah. It's a good movie, but it's a movie of its time. It has a Hitchcock tone and edit, which, by today, some younger viewers may not enjoy that, but you know, if you're a little older and you have more diverse tastes in cinema, you know, you'll understand it. They're all kind of longer than they have to be, but that was just the way movies were, you know?
Yeah.
And they're not like Disneyland rides where it's just jam-packed action through fucking 2 hours like they are now.
Well, and the thing about it is that you can't... I kind of feel like, too, that if you, and I've said this before, if you're going to watch a movie, like at least invest your time and attention in watching the movie. And I'm not saying that movies, you know, can't be action packed or they have to be super slow. I'm just saying that for scenes of action or horror or whatever to have any impact, you have to have the calm before the storm, essentially. You can't just come in and just be like, you know, stab, 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 kill, kill, kill. It's like nobody would care because it's like, I don't care. I don't know who these characters are. Who gives a shit if they get stabbed? It's, you know what I mean? It's like you wouldn't care.
Like a modern movie.
Well, I mean, you know, well, it depends on what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you do need some time, and you can debate all you want about, you know, how long a time you need, like with characters before you start to care about them. Sometimes you spend a lot of time with character and you still don't care about them, which, you know, is probably it's hard to say that it's like, you know, a failure of the filmmakers. It might just be the person watching it because other people might relate.
I think a lot of it is the era in which it was made. I mean, you look at Amityville Horror, the original. I saw it in the theater when I was a kid and just fucking loved it. We thought it was a fucking scary movie.
Yeah, I thought it was scary too.
It's kind of long and slow, and there's nothing real special about it when you look at it today. You can actually watch like an episode of The Haunting from the 90s and it's better. Just an episode of The Haunting might actually be better. If you'd saw that as a kid in its place, you'd have been even more impressed. You know what I mean? If you'd brought that back in time when you were a kid. Now they come out with a movie, it's not going to be edited and shot the way Amityville Horror is. It's going to be like something out of the Conjuring universe.
Yeah.
And the Conjuring universe is kind of like an episode of The Haunting on steroids.
Yeah.
It's even more intense.
Yeah.
And it's even faster paced. And there isn't a lot of characterization and acting in the goddamn thing. It's a damn haunted house. It's a haunted house movie.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's just like going through the ride at Disneyland through the haunted house, the haunted mansion. It's just more scarier. It's a bunch of imagery. There's story there, but it is a very simple story compared to, say, like the dialogue out of Amityville Horror.
Interestingly, I don't know, because I think I brought up Danse Macabre before, the Stephen King book, and I've read it like probably a million times because I thought it was like really good. If you don't know, it's a nonfiction book, and he wrote it about kind of the history of horror. It wasn't even like essentially a history. He was just kind of like, you know, talking about horror. He was teaching it at the time. He was teaching a course in horror and literature and movies. So it's kind of like that. So it was like from 1950 to 1980, although he talked about like some classics of literature as well. He talked about books, movies, TV, everything. And he was saying something about the Amityville Horror that really stuck with me. He said when he first saw it in the theater, that one of the things that really struck him about it was that a lot of the shit that's in it that you maybe think doesn't have anything to do with the haunted mansion, you know, the haunted house or whatever. he's like, it's almost kind of like trying to make you relate to these characters because it's an economic, he calls it an economic horror.
Yeah, there's not much there.
Well, no, not in that sense. He yeah. means that because all of this shit happens, like this family, the Lutz family, moves into the house and they clearly don't have a shit ton of money because they have a bunch of kids. Right. And so there's a lot of scenes in it, like a lot of the shit, that the supernatural shit that happens has to do with the house getting wrecked, like the front door being blown up, like missing. All the money going missing, like all that kind of stuff. So he's like, in that way, you can relate to it in an economic sense.
Yeah,
and he said that when he saw it in the theater, somebody in front of him even said, think of the bills.
Yeah.
Like that was the first thing they were thinking of. And he's like, well, that's a successful like way of getting to horror because that's something that a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because this family didn't have a lot of money and like their whole house was like being wrecked around them and they had to pay for it, presumably.
Now, I remember after we saw that one, Kimmy took me to see another one later on. It was The Evil.
Yeah.
Which was, that was several years later, I think. So I don't
know. The Evil was before.
Was it before?
The Evil, I think, was 1978.
Uh-huh.
I think. And Amityville Horror was 79.
Okay, so I'm missing the same
I
era.
I think.
All right.
Same the era. Evil might have been 81, but I'm pretty sure it was 78. I was pretty sure it was 78.
Yeah, maybe. I thought it was after, but, you know, I was a kid.
Yeah.
So she took me to see that one, too. And
yeah, it might have been right around the same
time.
It
was very different. I thought that one was a lot more intense than Amityville Horror. I thought it was scarier back then. I look at it now and I was like, no, that's not very scary. Actually, Amityville was more scary. It was a little slower.
Yeah.
And it, like you said, it built up all that tension and stuff. And there was a lot more mystery in it. The Evil actually showed you a lot. People being picked up by ropes and hung and people being electrocuted and dead guy in a box and people getting sucked into, people getting burned up by the furnace. So there wasn't very much mystery in it. But I remember it being intense. These new, Blumhouse or fucking Conjuring, these Conjuring universe movies are more like The Evil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a haunted house ride.
I mean, the first Conjuring actually was fairly restrained, at least from what I remember.
Yeah.
You know, which I think works better in horror up to a point. You know what I'm saying?
You said The Evil was 78.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, okay.
I said it.
So
I
was nine.
Yeah. Okay. It came out the year before Amityville Horror. Because I'm pretty sure Amityville Horror was 79.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that I liked about Amityville that made it scarier, one, was, you know, the thing about this poor family, like, financially going down the drain, too. But also of the scary idea of the husband being taken over essentially by a demonic force or the ghost of the murder of Ronnie DeFeo or whatever.
Yeah.
And of you living in a house with somebody that you think is maybe like going crazy and might chop your head off with an axe. That's pretty scary. And I remember when I was a little kid, what's the scene that scared me most of all was when Margot Kidder goes up to her daughter's room and the little girl saying she was talking to Jody, and then she sees the rocking chair like rocking back and forth, and then she sees those eyes out the window. Ooh, that used to freak me out when I was little. That with a giant pig. They don't, and I don't even think they ever show the giant pig. I mean, she just describes her as a big pig, right?
Well, they showed the eyes and the outlines of it. Remember,
there was like an outline of it. I think like up on the balcony, house. Like when he was out in the boathouse.
On the boathouse, he saw it looking out through the window at him.
Yeah,
that scared me.
Yeah, see, that kind of shit's creepy, but they didn't, like, show it. It's not like, oh, like, big pig monster, like, in full, because that would have been dumb. Yeah. It's creepier, like, just leaving it to your imagination.
The Evil was 78, Amityville was 79. Okay, yeah, so just with my memory.
Yeah.
For you guys who are new to the show, I had this babysitter that lived a couple doors down to me when I was a kid. Her name was Kimmy. And Kimmy looked like Carrie Fisher. She looked just like Princess Leia. I showed a picture of her one time. Maybe I'll show it again one time. I have family photos of her around here somewhere. But at that time, she was probably about 14, maybe 13, 14.
Yeah.
Because in the 70s, your mom would hand you over to teenage girls to watch you. They probably still do that today. But teenage girls would take care of the kids and shit. But no, that was my first girlfriend. I fucking loved her. Yeah, I loved her. And when she hit about 16, she had like a fucking 19-year-old boyfriend. I was heartbroken. I was like,
oh, you can't compete with that.
Yeah.
How old were you?
He had a car. I was like maybe like 10 or 11.
You're like, I'm 10. I can't drive.
Yeah, and my buddy Jimmy, who was the same age as me, she goes, there goes your girlfriend. There goes your girlfriend.
Poor baby Tom. Yeah,
he's got a Camaro. I was like, oh, you know.
That motherfucker.
Yeah, that motherfucker had a Camaro.
Oh, my God. I just went, when you were talking
starts
about.
Young, man. It starts early.
When you were talking about him, I pictured him as like John Travolta's character from Carrie.
He was blonde, hair, like a hit.
So
like,
more like the Tommy.
Like a dude that would have
like
weed.
Like the Tommy Ross character.
Yeah. Like a dude that had weed and shit. It's a California guy, you know.
Oh my God.
This is California. Yeah. She's walking out with him. Goodbye, Tommy. And I was like, oh, bye.
Oh,
there she
but
goes.
I love you.
There she goes. And then running, dude ran off in the car to get some ass.
Poor baby Tom.
Yeah. It's funny.
I was thinking the other day, because I was thinking about Brian De Palma in the context of this movie, and I don't think that we've ever reviewed the original Carrie, have we?
Mm-mm.
Interestingly.
I don't think so.
We should probably get around to that one of these days. Now, I did not know until today, because I know, I think it was Esther that asked, like, right before we started even talking, that asking if anybody had seen the remake of Sisters. And I was like, you know what? Until today, I didn't even know that there was one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew that there's other movies called that, but they're not the same movie. But I guess in, I think it was 2014, I guess they did a remake of this. I think Chloe Sevigny was in it. And I was just kind of like, now I kind of want to see it. Although I never heard anything about it, so it can't have been that fucking fantastic. But I mean, it's a good story. You could totally remake this.
Yeah.
Nowadays. You know, just without that terrible hair. Margot Kidder's hair looked okay. But that other...
I thought they remade Carrie several times already.
No, I'm not talking about Carrie. I'm talking about Sisters.
Oh, Sisters. Okay.
They did remake Carrie.
Yeah, I'm getting confused.
It was... I think... What's-her-face was in it? Chloe Grace Moretz?
Okay.
I think she was in it. The first one, you know what? Am I thinking that? Or was she in the second one? Carrie 2, The Rage, or whatever the fuck it was. I remember seeing one of them and thinking, well, that wasn't as bad as I was expecting, but I don't really remember much about it either.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of feel like that was one of the ones that they just should have left alone. Because it was good, you know?
Yeah.
If you're going to remake a movie, take like a shitty one. Or one that was a good idea but poorly executed at the time because they didn't have the budget or whatever, and do that. I don't know. I don't know why they insist on like remaking good movies. I'm like, they already did a good one. Don't do it again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You all right?
Yep.
60s Ram says, I've seen the remake. It's really not that great. Yeah, I figured it wouldn't be. I mean, this one is just so, I mean, it's very 70s, but there's something very kind of like just cool and distinctive about it. Like I said, I love all the split screen stuff. I love the Bernard Herrmann score because it's totally like over the top and like melodramatic. And I love that. And I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird fucking flick. And like I said, I really like that long hypnotic sequence at the end. This is like totally creepy and weird. Sisters remake is on Shudder UK. Not sure about the US version. Yeah, I think that you guys have the original version on Shudder UK too, because that was where I noticed it. But I don't have the VPN on our Xbox like in the other room. So unless I wanted to watch it on my laptop in the office, because I do have a VPN on this, so I can watch UK Shudder on this computer, but we wanted to watch it in there on the big TV. So we just watched it on Amazon Prime. We just paid $4 to rent it. You know what I mean? To get the Criterion thing. But yeah, I think both versions are on the UK Shudder. I don't know. I might get around to watching it one of these days, but I have a whole bunch of other movies I got to watch.
T says they better not remake Exorcist. Yeah, they shouldn't even fuck with that. Don't even try.
Well, didn't they make like a bunch? Well, they made a bunch of sequels and prequels and...
We saw. Didn't we see a Mexican one that was a lot like... It was like, I said, well, if they was going to remake The Exorcist, it would be like that. But remember that? We saw it a couple years back.
I can't remember now.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Mexican.
Well, I can't remember.
You remember?
No, yeah. I don't remember.
It was pretty good.
I mean, we've seen a lot of stuff in the last few years.
Yeah.
Tila says Sisters is in my top 25 horror movies of all time. It's really, really good. And I just kind of, I don't know. I just feel like it doesn't really get, I hardly hear anybody bring it up. I think I watched it like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe longer, because I saw it on an underrated horror movies list. Cause I, you know, periodically go through those in case I miss something. And I was like, oh, Brian De Palma. It's like, I've never heard of that one. So I went and watched it and I was like, oh, that's pretty awesome. I don't know why I never heard of it before. So But it's one that still doesn't really get talked about. I guess it's got a little bit of a cult following, but not as much as some of the other ones. Yeah, Dermot says The Fog and the Wicker Man remakes were terrible. Yeah, agree. I saw the remake of The Fog. Well, I saw The Wicker Man too, that which was unintentionally funny.
Yeah, the fog was
that remake of The Fog was
garbage.
Awful.
Garbage.
It was awful. I couldn't believe it was that bad, actually.
It was just a random movie that they called The Fog.
I kind of feel like that happens a lot. I feel like there are generic like horror movie scripts kind of floating around. And I think like a studio will get hold of them and be like, well, this is kind of like some random ass motherfucker that wrote this. We don't, there's no names attached to it. So let's attach it to an already kind of known IP. So we'll just kind of tweak it a little bit so we'll it sort of fits in and we'll call it that.
It had absolutely no artistic value. No, none at all. That wasn't even art.
Yeah, it was just lame.
Yeah, terrible.
It was just lame.
Terrible.
But, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Not just, much. Just don't, just not watch it. That's what you're going to do.
Just watch the original.
Did I like the Halloween remake? The Rob Zombie one? No, I did not.
I didn't see it.
I didn't like it. Like I said, some of it was okay, but I thought I like some of Rob Zombie shit. Like I liked House of a Thousand Corpses and all that, but it's like when he remade Halloween, I was like, why on earth would you want to demystify Michael Myers like that?
Remember this?
Like, oh, he was just an abused child and whatever. It's like, I don't want to sympathize with Michael Myers. I just want him to be like a scary boogeyman.
We saw the last Halloween in the theaters. It had, Curtis.
Yeah.
In
that had Jamie Lee Curtis in it.
And, I forgot it instantly.
It was all right.
It was mediocre.
It was all right.
I had never really seen Halloween 1 or 2 up until recently. I still don't remember much about them. So they didn't make a big impact on me. The one that I saw constantly in the day that it came out was Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. And for me, that was the first Halloween movie that I saw. So I didn't have any preconceived notion of what a Halloween movie was. And I liked that movie. I still like Halloween
3. It's so weird. I love it. Plus, a lot of kids get killed in it.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Michael Myers. And I didn't know there was anything to do with Michael Myers at the time that I saw it. So I saw it as a standalone. Yeah. I loved it with the fucking 3 more days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock, and all that shit. And the fucking kid's head explodes and a bunch of crickets, and roaches, and snakes.
Bugs come out.
And snakes come out and kill the mom and everything. I just thought it was awesome. And she was messing around with that little silver shamrock disc with a bobby pin, and it blew up and shot her in the mouth, and a potato bug came out, and I was just, oh, yeah. I had no idea what I was watching.
Yeah, some crazy shit in that one. I really liked that.
Yeah, and the guy had an army of androids. And he's fucking got Stonehenge with him, and it's Stonehenge dust.
It's such a batshit idea.
Fucking crazy.
I know.
Loved it. But it had a weird alien feeling to it. It was almost kind of like something out of Videodrome or The Brood. You know what I mean? Like a what's his name movie? Like a
David Cronenberg.
Like a Cronenberg movie. Where it was just Cronenberg was always talking about some weird institute or some weird company. Or some weird group that was doing something weird. And it was like that.
It was, actually. It did have a little bit of a Cronenberg.
It was like a Cronenberg movie. That's how I saw it. Because I saw those movies all at the same around the same era. The Brood, Videodrome, and Halloween 3. That was around the same era I was watching them. And I just thought that's the way a horror movie should be. Should be some weird institute doing some weird shit. And people bumble into it and they go, wow, you know.
Wow, this is some weird shit.
Wow, they're blowing up bums.
Stop it.
And then, you know, they're controlling bums with televisions. Making people, you can't tell.
As one does.
Yeah. Illicit porn coming through the cable, through the satellites.
Tila says she's never seen Videodrome.
You gotta
see Videodrome.
Go ahead and unsub.
You gotta see Videodrome.
Yeah, Videodrome.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
I mean,
Deborah Harry from Blondie's in it. It's got a lot of fucking bondage and S&M and
stomach, mind control all kind of
that comes through video signals. And it's weird, but it is very, very cool. Very cool. Way ahead of its time.
It was.
And, it takes a while to understand what the movie is about. You're going, wait a minute, what the hell's happening? It's a little easier to understand now, but maybe not really, because I think a young person probably wouldn't understand the grasp of how video changed things.
Yeah.
This movie is about the emerging video technology.
Yeah, because it's early 80s.
Early 80s.
Yeah.
Right. And there was a big difference between video technology and film. It opened up new possibilities for underground recording and broadcasting.
Yeah.
And the emergence of cable television and satellite signals that could broadcast video. That was like the internet of the age, of the era.
Yeah.
There's another weird movie that fucking influenced me a lot. Growing up in a military academy, it was about a kid in a military academy that uses an Apple IIe computer to summon the devil.
Evil Speak.
Called Evil Speak. I fucking loved it.
With Clint Howard.
Clint Howard. I love
Ron Howard's brother.
Because we didn't really know.
Ice Cream Man.
We didn't really know what was possible with a fucking computer. A lot of people didn't really know what a computer was for.
I kind of loved so many horror movies in the 80s. They're like, yeah, I'm just going to use this little Apple IIe computer with like three K or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to summon demons. And everyone's like, oh, I suppose so.
Yeah, they were picking some of the students in the academy were picking on him because he was kind of a fucking beta. So he summons demons to get the power of the fucking Satan. And he becomes like a fucking satanic ubermensch. It's fucking great, man. Really good.
I like that they actually talked about that movie a little bit on the new In Search of Darkness documentary. Because like I said, this one is part two, so they're In Search of Darkness. So they're kind of going into like a little bit more obscure movies. So they actually did talk about Evil Speak on there. Yeah. Ramon asked about Cronenberg's Dead Zone, which is also an amazing, amazing
good movie.
We actually reviewed that one a long time ago. That might have been one of the first ones that we did, now that I'm thinking about it.
I've still got a big soft spot for The Brood, though, from Cronenberg. That was a weird movie.
Well, like you said, those little kids in their little feety pajamas coming after
little
you.
Little feety pajamas. Little drone children.
And like I said, that scene where she's got all the babies, she's like licking all.
She's like a brood. She's like a queen ant popping out all these little fucking fatherless children that go out and fucking are psychically linked with her, obeying her commands. And it was all done through like the power of fucking suggestion through the mind and the subconscious. She was in this new age religion where the mind was controlling the body and trying to resolve fucking inner conflicts from your past. It's fucking Cronenberg, you know? Cronenberg, he was cool. He would, and his son, from the movies that I've seen, his son is the same way. He's
Shit. We reviewed Possessor.
Yeah.
And I actually interviewed Antiviral. So I think that's gonna go up Thursday. Yeah. I did a review of that. That was on UK Shudder, so I watched it on there. That was his first movie, I think. I think Possessor is only his second one. But he has a lot of the same obsessions as his dad does. You know what I mean?
Weird things that the body can do. Yeah. How does video fucking, how does that affect the body and the mind? And that's what Videodrome is. You need to see that one, T. Videodrome, fucking right.
Yeah, just kind of, well, and kind of like I said, you know, when we grew up, there was all these kind of like, because, you know, there was all that kind of shit with Faces of Death and like, it was a snuff movie and like underground videotapes and shit. Because like I said, that was like a new thing.
Yeah, what does that do to your mind?
You know, and so I think that he played on that really well. So I don't know how it, you know, I don't know how it plays today, but.
I got the Criterion edition of it.
Yeah.
And it looks really good. And Deborah Harry from Blondie is in it.
Yeah.
She co-stars in it. She does a really good job. She plays it, and she plays it straight. You know, she's very believable. She doesn't seem like she's just some rock star that they put in a movie. She's like an actress, a real actress.
Yeah.
And she's fucking obsessed with fucking BDSM and stuff. Pain. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a good ass flick.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have anything else we need to add?
We can shut it down.
Yeah, because we've been going more than an hour. Yeah. You got to make those. You got to get on those screens, man.
Yeah, I know.
You need to get on that. All right. So we will be back tomorrow. We haven't decided yet if we're going to do another movie review or if we're going to do a food show. We'll figure it out sometime before we go on. So have a good rest of your day, you guys. Thanks, everybody, for dropping by and chatting with us. And we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.